Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for perspective and insight on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 29th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great to have you with us. So, D.R., 2014 has come to an end, and a new year has started. In that new year, there has been a rash of explosions in pipelines that I don't think has gotten the media coverage that they deserve. Is that true?
Exactly. There have been a series of pipeline explosions occurring all across the country, and they're very unnerving if you think about the risks to the Keystone XL pipeline and how dangerous that is. MediaMatters.org recently did a study discussing one of the biggest spills, the spill in the Yellowstone River in Montana, which leaked 50,000 gallons of crude into the Yellowstone River, and how CNN and according to MediaMatters, CNN and Fox News completely ignored the fact that this spill highlights the potential risk of the Keystone XL pipeline. They did give credit to MSNBC host Ed Schultz and also MSNBC host Rachel Maddow for doing a proper job of putting the spill in the context of Keystone.
And also, everyone mentioned the spill, mm-hmm. but they just didn't make the connection that this is what would happen if you had a pipeline. Right?
Exactly. They did not mention that this is one of the reasons why there has been so much opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline, because if one of these pipelines spills if the Keystone XL pipeline spills or explodes, you have absolute destruction to people's livelihoods, to people's lives, to people's drinking water. It would just be an economic and ecological, chaos, basically.
Well, so let me just play devil's advocate. Is it the job of the news media to draw conclusions or implications? I mean, if I'm a reporter, I say, oh, my God, big spill in West Virginia, oil everywhere. Thank you very much. We go to the next story. Mm-hmm. Does he have a responsibility now to say, oh, yeah, and this is what would happen if Keystone XL were put in, what might happen with Keystone XL?
I'll defer to Media Matters' argument, which Media Matters indicates that they not only did they fail to put this in the context of the Keystone issue, CNN and Fox provided a forum to allow advocates for the Keystone XL pipeline to make all sorts of false claims not refuted by the hosts of the respective shows.
Oh, yeah, I mean, within the same show, they had Keystone people.
They're not necessarily the same shows, but they had different shows where they had a series of pro Keystone XL elected officials basically make their case and not present the other side of the argument, basically. So essentially, what Media Matters is suggesting that there's a de facto censorship at CNN and Fox about concerns about the Keystone XL pipeline, and that when you see reports about this spill and you don't put it in the context of the issues with the Keystone XL pipeline, and yet you then turn around and bring on people to wave the flag for Keystone XL, you are by implication suggesting that Keystone XL is objectively a good thing, when that's obviously not the case.
I mean, in other words, you're saying on balance, the entire reporting of the news by the corporation was unbalanced, and this is an opportunity they could have had to redress that balance and at least point out the reality of what a spill might look like.
Exactly. And I do have to give an extra special mention. I know I mentioned her previously, but Rachel Maddow has done a tremendous job about covering the series of these spills that have occurred all over the country and pipeline failures, and she had a great segment on the January 28th edition of her program, talking about how I believe in North Dakota, there is essentially no inspections whatsoever and no new due diligence whatsoever about the safety of these pipelines. And if we're trying to build this big, big pipeline, and if you still have this scenario in which in states across the country you have no real inspections of the safety of these pipelines, we are looking at a potentially billion-dollar disaster.
Right. I mean, North Dakota is where Keystone is going to come through, right? So if they don't have any kind of inspection. Well, I mean, just I have to admit, I was not up to date on some of these spill stories. But now that you mention it, there was some story about a spill in Yellowstone River or Yellowstone
yes.
National Park.
It was the Yellowstone River in Montana was
oh, okay.
The spill occurred on January 17th, which spilled 50,000 gallons of crude oil into the river. I believe that was the river where they determined that there was high levels of benzene, which is a carcinogen that ended up in the drinking water. And for all the people who dismiss the CO2 concerns about Keystone, you know, if they think about carcinogens going into somebody's water, I don't think they'd necessarily like that, would they?
Wow. Well, I saw a story in the Boston Globe this week about a guy who is a climate skeptic. So it's related to what you were discussing because it's all about media things. But there's a gentleman. I think he's probably a doctor. But his name is Willie Soon. His formal name must be William or something. But he goes by Willie Soon, mm-hmm. And he works for, or claims to work for, the Harvard Smithsonian Institute, which, of course, immediately sounds extremely august, and anyone who can claim both Harvard and Smithsonian credentials must be an honest broker and a smart guy. Long and short of it, Willie Soon has for long been accused of being basically a shill for oil companies. And in the particular instance that happened here, he and a couple of other guys got together and published a paper in a Chinese journal. That Chinese journal, so it's like Science Reports or something. Of course, the paper they published in this Chinese journal said that the IPCC, the UN group, had not used the correct method to assess climate change, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is that this academic journal over in China requires that authors sign a statement saying that they have no conflict of interest. And all of the authors, including Willie Soon, did sign that. And that is basically saying that they are completely free of conflict. Their paper is academically pure. There's no self-serving, or they haven't been paid to say anything. When, of course, most of Willie Soon's money comes from these fossil groups. So that assertion that they were free of conflict of interest was challenged. And so there's this brouhaha where Willie Soon and his friends are saying, oh, no, I claim... connection to the Harvard Smithsonian, but really, I did all this work on my own time, at night, you know, in the evening, and they don't say who paid for them, but Willie Soon has had a long history of being funded by fossil fuel industries. And so it's an example of the media calling out a climate skeptic who's trying to hide behind credentials, right? Mm-hmm. Am I too mean there? Is that a rotten thing to say, or is that accurate?
No. It's totally fine. Soon for people who might not know his background, he was one of these guys who, along with the co-author of this article, Chris Monckton, or as I call him, oh my lord, Christopher Monckton. Both Soon and Monckton have this long, long history of demonizing. Or either themselves demonizing or allowing their work to be used in terms of launching the most grotesque attacks on climate scientist Michael Mann of hockey stick fame. Michael Mann writes about this in his book, The Hockey Stick and the Climate Wars. Soon's research has highly controversial research and is highly debunked research was used by Senator James Inhofe in a successful attempt in 2003 to stop the passage of cap and trade legislation in the United States Senate. So he's been a long, long time player in in sort of the anti, he's been a long, long time soldier in the anti-science army. And Kurt Davies of the Clement Investigation Center was the person who pointed out that Soon in this paper, you know, suggested that he didn't have any sort of conflicts of interests, but when you look at his long, long history of receiving funding from, among other sources, ExxonMobil, and also, in accord, as the New York, as the Boston Globe pointed out, he's also received money from the American Petroleum Institute, the Texaco Foundation, and Koch Industries, then he has a series of conflicts of interests, and he should have disclosed them.
Well, I mean, I guess kudos to the Globe for publishing such a dangerous topic of challenging this guy. The other thing, DR, is that I understood 2014 was a pretty good year for coverage of climate on TV.
It was good, but not great. Media Matters did a study that was released on January the 28th, saying that 2014 was the largest amount of climate change coverage on CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox since 2009. And they said that, you know, while there was that increase in coverage, nevertheless, part of the problem is that, specifically in terms of the Sunday morning news shows, with the exception of CBS's Face the Nation, most of the Sunday morning news shows continue to peddle false balance. There continues to be an underrepresentation of climate scientists, and there continues to be an overrepresentation of media figures and political figures who attack and deny the science. So the mainstream media is still not covering this crisis as a crisis and is still continuing to drop the ball, and this is why we still need so much citizen activism and pressure to get the media to sort of cover this issue comprehensively. We've noted before the disgusting lack of coverage of the People's Climate March, the disgusting lack of coverage of Lima, and it shows that the mainstream media is still dropping the ball. It needs to pick the damn ball up.
But as you've said, DR, the alternate media, the YouTubes, the Facebooks, and the podcasts of the world, just like this podcast, are out to supplant those guys, right?
There's a gentleman whose name I don't recall, but he hosts a popular online podcast on YouTube called Secular Talk. And he talked about this issue of the mainstream media not covering issues like climate change, and he mentioned the great internet-based television host Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, and he noted Cenk Uygur's line that the media, by not covering 80% of the important issues in this country, created a vacuum for online media to jump into and to report the real news and the real facts. I think the only issue is that, you know, I know this is a factoid that's been tossed around, but I do think there's still some truth to it, that about 35 million people at least still watch the nightly news programs, still get their news from the nightly news programs. They don't watch cable news. They're not you know, fixated on Fox or MSNBC and CNN. So when those nightly news programs do a weak or worse job of covering this, this crisis presents a very skewed, you know, representation of the facts, and were it not for people like, you know, Ann Thompson of NBC and some of the hosts on CBS who do put forward a comprehensive job, I mean, it would be even worse. And we talk about the issues in terms of advertising and fear of backlash, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to say that you're supposed to do news, then do news. Don't do de facto entertainment. And you know, sometimes, you know, what was the old creed? You've got to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't cover this story, there are going to be a lot of people who might think they're comfortable now, but they'll definitely be afflicted.
DR, I appreciate your understanding and wisdom on these things. So anyway, folks who are listening can pick up links to some of these stories on the blog that will be associated with this podcast. It's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction, where you can listen or like us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or subscribe on iTunes. So we'll close this show the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.